Support for this program is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you.
The Local Thread.
Welcome back, everybody, to La Prensa Habla. I am Dr. Linda Alvarado Adse.
I'm Chaz Bose, president of La Prensa, and we are so excited to be here today with two awesome guests. It's good to see you. Dr. Linda, doing great things, shaking up the community. We appreciate all the people here at this round table. I think it's going to be dynamic.
Today, we have two speakers here, and we're talking about immigration and the immigration experience here in Northwest Ohio. Today, we have Martin Ramirez. I will let him introduce himself and talk about himself here in a minute. And we have Linda Parra as well. Martin, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and why I picked you to be in this podcast this week?
Well, yes. I guess for me, my story goes back to my parents' story. Proud son of Carmen and Victor Ramirez. My dad says it the best. He was in Reynosa, Mexico, in the plaza, and he dug into a trash can, a 55-gallon trash can, and pulled out two banana peels and gave one to his brother. They were that hungry. They were poor. And a man named Antonio Contreras comes up on him, and they thought he looked Caucasian. He happened to be Hispanic, Spaniard. And he says, what are you guys doing here? And my father says, well, my parents are up there trying to get passports to get back to the United States because my uncles and aunts and my dad were born in the United States, but they were convinced to go back to Mexico because of the World War II coming. Mm-hmm. And so they were stuck there for a year and a half, mm-hmm. and they were in abject poverty. Yeah. They were starving.
Which is amazing because at that time was the time right after the Bracero when the U.S. decided to open up our borders. There are, have been times when we open up our borders to allow people to come over, and we allowed agricultural workers. We had an agreement. The government had an agreement with Mexico to allow agricultural workers to come over to the U.S. to help the farmers farm because there was so much need for them. Then when you said they were convinced, may have been around, I'm not quite sure the year, but may have been around the time when the Bracero agreement ends and they do Operation Wetback, where then they decide to pick up all of those that came in and they tell them all, we need you to go back home for a little while because now we're closing our doors. And that was during Operation Wetback, which is also a very historical moment in our Latino history. So I'm curious if that may have been around the time.
This
would have been
be
in the 50s.
This is 1940, so Dad's his story carries on that they had an iron. That's all they had to their possession to eat. That's the way my grandma was making money, was la plancha, with the plancha. Oh. And so he wrote down, this Antonio Contreras says, go one town over to 18 de Marzo, a little town. He says, they'll have work for you. He didn't know Dad. He didn't know anything. So when they came back, third time, parents and kids all cried. They huddled and they cried, said, no, they didn't give us a passport. And then Dad pulls his pocket. Because when Dad, he said he put the paper in his pocket, he looked up and Antonio Contreras was gone. Never seen him again in his life.
Wow.
He's just like an angel. He's gone. So they sell the iron because it's a sunbeam and it's a United States made iron, so it went fast. And so sure enough, when they get to the bus and it takes them to this next place, it was a journey. They get there, it's now 48 hours they hadn't eaten, and they smell the food and the tortillas and everything in this house where this guy presents, my oldest uncle presents, he's the one with the education, could talk and read, and he says, you know, Antonio Contreras sent us. He says, you know Antonio Contreras, then you're a friend of ours, you can work the fields, we got cotton fields here. Says, yes. Ooh. He says, we got work for you. Oh, by the way, you made it just in time for dinner. And so they got to eat for the first time in 2 days.
Wow.
And Dad said, we thought we were going to starve that day.
Wow.
In that plaza. So that began their journey. They stayed another half a year before they could finally make it back over the border.
Mm.
Because you had to have back then someone to sponsor you.
And this is just your dad.
My dad's side of the
family. Your dad's side of the family, not with your mom yet.
My mom, he hadn't met her yet. She was in Bronzeville. She grew up in Bronzeville. They were migrating back and forth. But this is just my dad's side of the family.
Okay.
But a lot of blood, sweat, and tears.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they struggled.
And Linda, how did you get over here? What's your story? What's your migration story?
That is back on 2000 when I came here. I was in my country, Venezuela, my home country, Venezuela, and I met my future husband there in Venezuela through my business. I have a marketing company and radio and TV shows. So that place that he bought there was one of my clients, and that's how I met him.
Mm.
So one day I came, and you know, before you don't use emails to send the bills and all, you just get a person with a paper. Here's a bill, pay me. So I showed him the bill for the advertising that we were making every month, and then I asked him, who are you? And he said, I am the new owner. Okay, well, pay me. And then if you want to continue with advertising, we need to make a new contract with you. And you know, he said, okay, we will. And then, we started a relationship. We had a son. And then when Chavez got on power on 1999, he said, I'm out of here.
Hugo Chavez.
Yep. Yes. So I'm out of here because he knew that he was a military and he knew that something was coming. And so he closed business and back to the U.S. He was originally in Flint, Michigan, and he just came back to Toledo to stay here with a friend instead of going back to Flint.
Mm-hmm.
So 6 years later, he asked me, are you going to stay? Because I was going just back and forth with my son. I don't want to stay. I just want to be in Venezuela with my family, my business, and everything. I don't have nothing to do here. Mm-hmm. I got everything there. So he said, well, if next time you're coming, do you want to stay? And I said, I don't know. Well, you better stay because otherwise this is going to be over. And I said, well, let me go back to my home, to my country, and then I will let you know from there. So I went back to Venezuela and with my son. And then I asked my mom, Mom, what did you do? I mean, he said that.
And you're married to him at this time?
No, we were not married. We had a relationship. We had a son. And then he just wanted me to stay here in the U.S. And when I was back in Venezuela, I asked my mom, and because I was very close to my mom, then I asked for an advice because I don't want to come. And so she said, well, this is the father of your son, and your son needs to be close to his dad, so you should go.
That is a Latino cultural value.
Yes, right there. So I say, okay, so I close everything, business, radio show, TV show, and I say bye to everybody. And then bought the tickets. And 2 weeks before I get on the plane, Mom say she was doing the dishes. And she said, I just thinking the day that when you're going to leave. And I said, Mom, this is now you're going to tell me that? I said, I close everything, buy the ticket. If you say that before, I don't buy any tickets, and I used to stay here with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then so it comes June 7th, the day that I have to leave on 2000. And I give it a hug to my mom in the middle of the night when we were going to the airport. And it was my last hug to my mom. Because 3 months later, so that was in June, and she passed away in October.
Oh, I'm sorry.
With her attack. So every time that I was calling her, we were talking on the phone, she just was crying all the time. And so I decided I don't want to make my mom cry, so I didn't call her. And then I just asked my sister, and everything, how's mom doing? And we got the news on October that she passed. So I went back to, I was crying since 2:30 in the morning that we got the news on the phone until midnight that I got in Venezuela the same day.
Mm-hmm.
And how to get there, I was in the middle of the papers, you know, residency paper, because after I got here, when I when I got here in June, and we get married in July, a month later, and we were in the process of the resident, paperwork resident.
And so how does that work exactly for the listeners? How do you go about establishing your paperwork?
By the time it was the International Institute, you remember, with Mariela Machen, she was the director.
Old West End of Toledo?
Yes.
Yes.
Mariela Machen, she was the director there, and she's the one that I started my paperwork for residents.
They don't have that anymore, do they?
No, they closed, okay. And it's so sad because they were doing really good.
Yeah, they would do translation of legal documents. If you had birth certificates, things like that, they would go with you and help you do your paperwork. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was...
It was kind of like the ABLE, but with more legal process for residents and to do residents and citizenship.
Yep, and ABLE is Advocates for Basic Legal Equality, so people can know.
Yep. So, yeah, we did that, and then... I went to my mom's funeral, and then when I came back a week later, they got me immigration in Florida because the first entrance when you get here is Miami.
I've never heard these stories from you before.
No, I only met so long, but I never talk about my personal life.
Yeah, this is the first time I'm actually getting to hear you and know your life.
I never talk about my personal life right now. I'm giving you
the letter. Well, then we won't ask what you guys normally talk about.
Well, we're always talking work and community stuff, really.
Yeah, but if we want to talk about immigration, I have my own experience, and that's why I am being on those shoes, and that's why what I do, what I'm doing. When I came back from Venezuela after my mom's funeral, I brought my obituary, you know, and the newspaper to show the proof where I left the country. Mm-hmm. But when you are doing the resident papers, you are not allowed.
You wrote an
obituary? Yeah.
For your mom?
And we put it on the newspaper over there.
Oh, okay, over there.
It's like when you go here and see all the obituary. So I brought a page to show immigration. Hey, this is the reason why I left. So you are not allowed to leave the country when you are doing your residence and paper.
Right.
I don't know if it's 6 months,
and
between six months or when. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I left three months later because it was 4 months later. And so when I came back and I got in Miami, boom, immigration called me as soon as I get in. So they call me and say, come on here. And I remember that guy was a Cuban officer. Mm-hmm. And he has a lady next to him. And they were on the computer. Say, why you left the U.S.? You are not allowed to do that. But he was talking in the way that he was kind of like yelling at me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said, I left the country because my mom passed away. Mm-hmm. Well, you're not supposed to be doing that. You cannot leave the country. And I say, I don't care. And then he kept telling me, you are not, and then he just repeated back to me all the rules, and I don't care. Mm-hmm. And I just was crying, and all my answers to him was, I don't care, I don't care, I don't care, and I was crying. So he had all that yelling conversation with me, and the officer next to him was a woman, and then she told him, hey, somebody's calling you there on the back, you better go there. Who is calling me on the back? And then she said, I don't know. I just hear your name in the back. You should go there and see what's going on. So he left, and she got on the computer, and she said, don't worry. I know what is your situation. I feel it. I hear everything that you were telling to him. We're going to start your process again. I'm going to get on the computer. I'm going to make your new appointment for immigration in Cleveland. You need to go there. And you need to start your process all over again because while you had your resident paperwork is
voided out.
Yep. You left the country. So we're going to start all over.
But that goes to show there are some compassionate immigration officers.
Yes.
You know?
It depends who you got at that time.
Yeah.
Because there are good ones and there are bad ones. There are good ones that they can understand your situation. There are other ones that they don't care. They just go by the line and that's it. But that what happens. And then she understand. And then I say, okay, well, I was able to get in because he can deport me back. He can take me back.
Yeah.
Okay, you left. Okay, go back to your country.
Even when you're married and have a child. Wow.
Yep. So... I went to Cleveland, my appointment in Cleveland. That was a couple months later. And then as soon as I get in the office in Cleveland with the immigration guy, I sit and then I was going to take my obituary paper again. This mm-hmm. is my support. And then as soon as I go and do that, the officer says, stop, don't do it. I know your situation. Looks like it. They write everything, you know, the mm-hmm. the reason why you left the country. They put everything in the mm-hmm. computer. Mm-hmm. And then he say, don't worry, I understand your situation. And he say, if I was you, I will do the same thing. The yeah. officer, I'm Cleveland. And I say, thank you for understanding mm-hmm. the situation. But it's wow. something that I have to do, and I have to go back to my country to see my mom for the last time. And then I did it. And I don't know what consequences. I don't care. I just did what I need to do. Mm-hmm. And that was what I did.
Wow. Well, the immigration system doesn't sound too bad back in 2000 then, because that yeah. sounds like a really good group of people and a lot of compassion. Yeah. And I like
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
it was so back nice. Then, I think back then it was a little bit different. And I only say that because I was also at one time married to an immigrant of Asian descent. And, yeah, when we married, we went to Cleveland. We had to meet with people, get interviewed. We had to do this multiple times, you know, for the work permit. We did. We had three children together. So I think back then it was a little bit more different. I think right now there's not enough officers. You know, there's not enough judges. There's not enough people to be hearing. And I just think that it's gone just way out of control, mm-hmm. my own opinion. Mm-hmm. But we will be taking a break here, and we will be coming back to dive a little bit deeper into these conversations, a little bit deeper into what you all are doing now that you are here. What have you guys done? What has your family done now that's been here? So we're going to dive a little bit deeper into your immigration experiences and what currently you're doing when we get back from our break. Thank you.
Back to La Prensa Habla. We're so excited to have our two guests who are telling us their immigration stories, and it has been just an amazing, eye-opening conversation. We're going to ask you, Brother Martin, tell us, what have you been doing here in the Northwest Ohio area in these last several years? In Spanish, we'd say, ¿a qué te dedicas?
Bueno, I'm telling the stories, I guess, back to what I was saying earlier. My father and his family came up here in 1948. My dad, at 17 years old, settled into Williston, Ohio.
Where's that?
Right up here in Northwest Ohio, right by up here left of Toledo.
Oh, okay.
Right here, little farming community. Heard about big tomatoes, and they paid more money than Texas. So 8 days and 8 nights in a Model A, 21 flat tires. They slept 8-9 people in this truck. And he gets there. Mom and her family came up through Brownsville to Curtis, Ohio. Mm-hmm. So that's like outside of Oregon. And so they were kind of parallel working. So Dad and his family are there. Dad's 9 years older than Mom. So he's up here first. And so they end up meeting Dad by happen chance. He ends up leaving the working fields and gets a job at the railroad, North Oregon Southern on Front Street. So sure enough, as he gets to the front street on North Fork and Southern, he's on a break, and he looks over, and he sees Mom in the back of the pickup truck go by, and he's smitten. Four seconds is all it took. And he asks about her. So he ends up meeting her, going to her basketball game. She's 14 years old. And he's 20. Back then, that wasn't a big deal. That wasn't a big deal back then, as long as you came from good stock.
And this is all in your book, too.
Oh, yeah. This is in the book. And I'm currently writing Mis Padres, Mi Vida, which is I'm going to chronicalize their whole history. But, yes. And he gets invited to a Saturday dance. Little did he know that she invited four other guys. So to the dance, but she chaperoned. Her father, which is my grandfather on her side, is 6'1". Mm. My dad's 5 foot.
I was going to say.
So, yeah, my dad's a little chiquito, but that's not his dad. That's her dad.
But your mom wasn't real tall either.
Her mom's chiquita también. She was 5 foot.
I was going to say.
So it was pretty intimidating. Because
your family doesn't have height,
no,
I'm going to say.
I'm the tallest
Even the siblings
one.
Don't.
Yeah, I'm the tallest one.
Because I know
At
y'all.
At 5'8", I'm the tallest one in my siblings. So he lets the four guys go in front of him, and on her deathbed, he tells the story that he let the four guys go in front of him, and they were all taller, according to him, all better looking. And they all asked her, to, you know, and he named them. And I said, Dad, how can you remember their names 70 years later? Because this was 70 years later. And he said, Martin, you got to know the competition. So they all got shot down. And so he finally puts his hand out. And I said, why'd you have the courage to go up and do it? And he says, well, I was going to be made fun of. My sisters were going to make fun of me because if I came home and they didn't ask her to dance. He puts his hand out, and she takes his hand and stands up. And I say, in her obituary, they danced the dance that lasted 70 years.
Yeah.
Because on the night she passed, they were holding hands.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah.
Yep. La Prensa did a nice obituary where I put both of the mom and dad's stories together in La Prensa. I did this. Beautiful. And I put that piece.
That piece is in there because that was their story. But somewhere in between there, we went to the fields. We went in 1970. My dad didn't make enough money on the railroad. So in 1970, as a six-year-old, I ended up in the fields in Northwest Ohio. So I've got a book on the table here with the picture. The book is Whose Fault Is It When You Find Your Purpose? And then the picture is a field in Elmore or Oak Harbor, I'm sorry, more Elmore. And that's the fields we picked in.
Oh, wow.
So that's an actual field that, as a six-year-old, we went in there to help ends meet.
And who's we? Because you have a big family,
it's
Martin.
Hilda, Hector, Earl, myself, Jerry, and Milo.
That's so how many kids your mom had.
five boys and one girl. So
she did have a jump start.
she started young. How old was she when she had her first?
Well, she was probably 20.
Oh, they waited a while.
Yeah, they dated 6 years. Chaperoned.
Oh, okay.
Chaperoned.
Oh.
They chaperoned. And Dad said her youngest brother ate a lot of candy because they couldn't. He'd send him to the festivals, to the thing, so he could get a peck on the cheek to go get candy. But they were chaperoned for 6 years.
And then she just started having a bunch of.
But yeah, when we went to the fields in Northwest Ohio, we had that experience.
So tell us, are you writing now then?
Yeah, I'm writing.
You become a historian for just your family or Latino culture in general?
Well, I think with the book, what it's going to tell is not just our story, because when we were in them fields, we seen the Hispanic story, the Latino story of the migrant workers that came from Mexico that we fed, mom fed. They didn't have fresh water. They had that well water. She constantly brought enough clothes, constantly giving them clothes, our clothes, sometimes accidentally our good clothes. We just went out. She would do this accidentally. It never failed every year. We just went out school shopping, and she would take one of the school shirts from one of our brothers, and myself too sometimes, and put it in the wrong bag, and next thing you know, Pito over there is wearing my branded shirt. Like, Mom, that's my shirt.
You don't need it. You don't need it. Luego se va a creer mucho. Then he's going to think
it's
all that.
It more than you. But this is Mom. This is who Mom was. And then Dad also was in the room with Valdemar Velasquez he was one of the original nine
founders.
He founded with Valdemar Velasquez.
FLOC.
So, FLOC.
The Farm Labor Organizing Committee.
Yes. So Valdemar talks of Mom taking Dad's hand, putting it in his, and said, I'm entrusting my husband with you because this could get dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I've got all these kids, and you could put him in a lot of danger, but I'm entrusting you. So then what Mom do, what she does best, she cooks, she feeds, and she leads in the background. So when they had organizing things, she was in the kitchen cooking for all these people.
Mm-hmm.
But that was her role.
Quick, fun question. What is your number one? I'm going to ask this question to Linda as well when she gets done with her piece. But what's your number one meal, that number one go-to meal that Mom cooked that made you and can make you still transport you in time to your childhood?
Tamales.
He had offered to.
Tamales.
I didn't know you were bringing this food. He said, I would have brought some tamales.
Had I not had this arm in a
Who
sling.
Makes them now? Where do you get
them? I make them. I've got
the
tamales.
Recipe.
She does menudo. I do her menudo. Yeah, she left the fideo. Fideo is another one.
That's awesome. And the awesome thing about what you're doing is that we all hear our story through other people's stories. And so it's so, as you're talking and telling your story, and I'm listening, I can think of stories that I've personally lived or family members have lived. because we all can view the world as we listen to the chronicles of people's lives. We're all listening with our heart and can tune in and find ways to relate. And so when we do that, we understand each other so much better. Mm-hmm. And so I thank you for taking those hours and that time to make sure their history isn't forgotten.
Right, it's amazing right. that we focus on the differences when we have so much more alike. Mm-hmm. And this world would be so much better if we'd focus on the similarities instead of the one few things we have different. Because that's what it is. Like mm-hmm. you said, everybody would, whether it's beef stroganoff, you know, my neighbor mom used to make beef stroganoff, and I could smell mm-hmm. it to this day. But my mom would make, you know, huevos rancheros in the, mm-hmm. on a Saturday morning, that in an all-white neighborhood, that would just smell that whole neighborhood up, and everybody's got cereal just looking through the window. That's going. Yeah. That's not fair. Yeah. But I would love that smell of beef stroganoff, and I'm sure that mm-hmm. kid, my neighbor, took a memory back of beef stroganoff.
Yep, yep. And that's like today. Today, our third segment will have food. And I brought a little segment of Laredo and our like little ice cream. They're not really ice cream, but they're like an ice cream truck kind of thing that goes through town, because those are my memories. Those are things mm-hmm. that I cherish, because we don't have that here in Northwest Ohio. So I think that's so nice that at least you're trying to keep them alive by mm-hmm. writing about it. So your next generation and so your children will be able to have that as well.
Exactly.
Yep.
Before you get to Laredo, we need to go back to Toledo/Venezuela.
Yep. Venezuela. Yeah. What are you doing now, Linda? Do you want to share?
Okay, I am the founder and president of Nuestra Gente Community Projects, which is a Latino nonprofit organization here in Lucas County, and also WBCC 96.5 FM, the only 24/7 Spanish radio station in Toledo, in Northwest Ohio. Mm-hmm. So it's a public radio station too, like this one. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of work in the community. Our main power is volunteers. You know, mm-hmm. We have a lot of volunteers that help us to do everything that we do, serving the community to different programs, from food to furniture.
So you have a food pantry.
Yes.
You have a spot where people can go and get furniture, clothing. Everything's free. Mm-hmm. There's no charge to it. You offer classes. Mm-hmm. I know you have like lupus.
Lupus, yeah.
What other, you have some classes for kids too, don't you?
Yes, after we have the Semillita programs. Semillita's literacy is in English, where we do an after school program and also soccer. Mm-hmm. So they do from arts to sports during this those 2 hours of programming after the school. Mm-hmm. And we use the library down there on Broadway Street, or the one on in the east side, the Love Branch.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of, that we do for the community, and it's all free. We receive a lot of donations. We are so thankful for donors, from clothes to furniture, mm-hmm. And food also for our community. It is a lot of people that say, I want to buy, A month ago, I got a guy, they say, I want to donate $1,000 to your food pantry, and I want to be able to go with you to go to one of those markets and buy some food mm-hmm. for your pantry, and then you can just give it out to the community through your food pantry. So that's so beautiful how people can
come together
help. And help. And I had like WhatsApp messages, messenger, mm-hmm. Emails, text messages, mm-hmm. phone calls. People that will say, can you come and pick it up? I have a sofa. I have a bed to donate. I have some clothes mm-hmm. to donate. Can you come and pick it up? Or can we go to your building and drop it off?
Because Toledo really is a giving community.
It is.
Toledo really is a community that knows how to stand with each other. And mm-hmm. it's like Martin said, there are some people, of course, who focus on all the differences, but there are more people working mm-hmm. together and banding together. I just did that recently. I found some community leaders that I had not spoken to in years or really ever had a conversation with, and said, you know, it's time to communicate and have conversations together and have lunch mm-hmm. together. Doesn't mean we have to be best friends, but we can all get along because we're all serving the same community, the same group of people. Mm-hmm. And so we need to really push past the differences. And mm-hmm. so it's sounding like, you know, you're experiencing the goodness and the good things mm-hmm. That are in this city and in this surrounding areas. And I love to hear that.
Yeah.
And so you grateful. Have a signature event, too. You have your Barrio, your art festival.
Yes. We do the Barrio Latino Art Festival, which is the second Saturday of August. Mm-hmm. We do also holiday baskets, mm-hmm. Thanksgiving baskets. Yep. So we distribute from our center 100 turkey baskets. Mm-hmm. And also for Christmas, too. We do a Christmas basket where we provide toys for families.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have some of your artists. We're going to have some of your artists. So I wanted to do that one for sure, because we're going to have some of your artists. And our next episode after this, we'll have Delfina.
Nice.
Yep. And Tina Tagle as well. Yes. That will be our guest.
Yes, that was
shameless plugs over here.
Yes, that was a really good thing happening back in 2012 when mm-hmm. all those Latino artists got together and started painting murals on the Broadway street.
Yep.
So it was a really nice movement at that time.
And Broadway's looking so beautiful. All of the updates finally, the street construction mm-hmm. has finished, and it looks so nice.
The sculpture in the middle, it's starting to all get tied more together. And you're located right there in the heart
right
of it
the
as
middle.
Well.
Yep.
Right.
Right in the middle of Broadway Street, 1411 Broadway Street, Nuestra Gente Community Center.
That's wonderful. And Martin, with your books, how would people even access that? Or how do you
Legacy
do that?
LegacyCatcher.com is what we're doing. But
Legacy Catcher, what is that? That's like anybody interested in writing about your life, you can use this organization?
Well, LegacyCatcher.com is the website where I've got pictures of Mario, my son with Down syndrome. He's 30 years old.
So this is your own website?
Yeah, this is my own website.
Oh, okay.
So, we've got that website. But I've got two older typical sons, and we do speeches, Mario and myself. The first two books were about more Mario, and so the next one's going to be about my parents and my legacy there. So I'm on the Waite High Alumni Committee. I'm also on the Flock Committee. Mm-hmm. I'm also on the Worker Center Committee. I retired as a union president for the Postal Service. Mm-hmm. So I got my hands in quite a bit of Waite High Distinguished Alumni, proud Waite High Distinguished Alumni. So I'm constantly putting fingers out there and staying involved in the community, trying to find those similarities and see where I can help out to bring everything together that you know, we can all benefit from. But
Your son has a beautiful story.
He does.
Beautiful. Yeah. I would love to do just a whole show like on that one day, because he's an adult now.
He's 30 years old. 30 years old. Yeah.
And you want to share a little bit?
Yeah, I truly believe we all came here with the gift, and I call it Genius I Fully Trust. That's the acronym GIFT. That truly God all gave us a gift. That if if these young kids can find their gift sooner than later, don't spend 30, 40 of your best years at a job that has nothing to do with your gift, because then that becomes abject frustration. Mm-hmm. So I seen this at the post office. I seen people show up at the post office and they can't stand coming to work. Mm-hmm. And you sit there and you look at them and say, man, you know, you're perfectly, I mean, I seen this one lady, she was just perfectly made up. She was a plus size lady. And yet she reminded me of somebody that belonged behind a Lion's counter that would help ladies with makeup. Because at 5 in the morning.
Lions, we don't even have that story anymore.
Or Macy's, Dillard's. Yeah, she belonged
dating
there.
Dating ourselves.
And as soon as I said that, she dropped tears. Aww. But she couldn't make it to work on time by 5 minutes every day. So she's ready to be fired from the post office, even though she had 10 years in. So I just knew she wasn't in her gift. Mm-hmm. So we all have that. And so when you start looking for it younger, I'm trying to help 14-year-olds to 24-year-olds find their gift, start looking for it. Because a mango tree gift isn't for itself. It doesn't produce mango fruit for itself. The tree doesn't eat its own fruit. It's for you. Mm-hmm. So your gift isn't meant for you. It's for someone else. Mm-hmm. So if Mario came to this world to give his gift to you, then by default, he gets something back. Mm-hmm. So I'm operating on the same premise. If we give this information to these kids, enough kids get it, then by default, God blesses us. Mm-hmm.
And so in, because I know your story, you talk about how your son every day is giving you this gift, every single day.
I love those conversations. I mean, I love this. And we just need to have kind of like a coffee table here.
Well, we're going to get ready to have something to eat here in a minute. So we'll be able to continue this. Not quite coffee, squirt.
I have a sister with Down syndrome, too. So we have so many things common, you know.
I am learning so much about you, Linda, today.
I didn't bring these to sell. These are to give away. So whoever wants one of these books can
have it. She was a baby in the house, my sister. Yeah.
They have a pure heart.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I didn't know if you were throwing darts at me because I'm always at least 5 minutes late when I come for this show. So maybe that's why I'm just the guest co-host and not the sit-in co-host, because this is not my calling, but it is my calling to let you know that we'll be right back. Welcome back to La Prensa Habla. We are doing our word of the day, putting this word in action. I asked our guest, Linda Parra, from Nuestra Gente, to give us an idea of what she thought our word of the day should be. And Linda, what did you come up with?
Compartir.
That word means share. And so we're compartiendo, that's the action of the word compartir. We're compartiendo some goodies that our host Linda thought would be an awesome thing to share her childhood and her memories and her history. What are we sharing? What are we compartiendo today, Dr. Linda?
So today, as I mentioned earlier in the show, we are sharing a piece of my memory from Laredo, Texas. Laredo is a border town, kind of close to the southern point of Texas, if you go all the way down to the border. And when I would go over there, I would spend I would take my kids for, you know, every like 3 months. We would spend every summer. But when you go over there in the summer, not like here where I grew up in Northwest Ohio, you'd have an ice cream truck that would come, have music, you'd run out, you'd get ice cream or popsicles or, you know, shaped ice cream. Well, here in Laredo, the ice cream like trucks go out. But when you go run out to them, they're selling you stuff like they open up a bag of Cheetos and they put like Red Hot on it. So we brought some of that. They will have mango in a cup with lemon and tahini seasoning on that. You can put chile on it as well. You can get angelitas y diablitos that are like raspas, like snow cones. Or even get that like in a slushy, as we would call it in Northwest Ohio. But it would be made of, the angelitos would be the shaved ice with lemon juice. And the diablito would be the shaved ice with lemon juice and hot sauce. And that would be like your snow cone or your slushy. You can even get it made out of pickle juice. So
up
shaved
north,
ice.
That would give me a stomach ache.
Up north, people would not understand how to have that. I really even... As what I brought today, I brought mango, pineapple, and coconut. And it sat in lemon juice for a while. And you can put the tahini on that as well. And you can also put chamoy, which is another sauce that I have here. And you can put that on there. It's like a sweet, spicy, chili-like sauce. And then you can add more chili if you want as well. And I really also wanted to get it with jicama. Actually, jamaica is our fruit juices that you can also get when the
hibiscus tea
goes by. Yep, it's hibiscus tea. You could go up and get hibiscus tea, water made of tamarindo, which is tamarind, or like horchata, which is the rice water with like cinnamon in it. But I really wanted to have, and our fruit salad was also the jicama, but that wasn't in season here in. It's not always easy to find here in Northwest Ohio fruits and, you know, spices or ingredients that we're used to. So when I went to the store, I was like, what can I get? What can I get that's unique? So I busted open the coconut this morning, drank the water up out of it, cut up the coconut as best as I could. The pineapple, I got that. The mango, luckily it was pretty ripe. And then I brought corn, because that's the other thing. When the truck goes by, you can get corn. You can get corn that's been steamed Then they roll it, they wipe it down with a Mexican mayonnaise. So the Mexican mayonnaise is made with like a lemon juice as well. It's like our like mayonnaise that we're used to here in the North, but it has like a lemon juice and some spices inside of it as well. So they'll take the corn, they'll slather it with this mayonnaise, they'll roll it in a crumbled up cheese that I also brought, and then you can put chile on that and you can put tajin on that as well. We put chile on everything, we put lemon on everything. So I thought I'd bring a little bit of my childhood today, and then I also brought squirt. Because like I said, I thought to make angelitas and diablitos, but the shaved ice was a little bit, I thought, too much. But squirt over there is very typical. Squirt, we can add it to lots of different things, but squirt is really a grapefruit soda. So in Laredo, this would be if the truck came playing its music, ringing its sounds, you would run out. You wouldn't find somebody giving you a milky dairy product. You would find somebody giving you fruit, lemon, salt, hot sauce. That's what you would find.
Which you probably need in that weather.
Yes.
Do they sell things like this in Venezuela?
No. Just regular ice cream.
I know. I think Venezuelanos aren't really big into like spice or hot sauce. I know we've got some Venezuelans that go to our church, and they've introduced us to wasacaca.
Mm-hmm. Ew, what's that? That don't say like a weird it's name.
The ending.
I know the ending, huh, Martin?
It's a cilantro mayonnaise. Oh, it's delicious.
I would have thought it was a chocolate mousse or something.
No, I'm a believer. They put it on top of all kinds of delicious food, actually. And then a lot of Venezuelans have a lot of Colombian influence because it borders.
So close,
and so we've been eating a lot of Venezuelan and Colombian food lately. I'm talking about they've got hamburgers that have like 6 and 7 layers of meat. I mean, it's some, you can't even open, my mouth doesn't open that wide.
Really?
But they're like that? Wow. Yeah, like a foot. We have foot long hot dogs. They have foot high hamburgers.
Wow, I never knew that.
And so it is amazing, but no spice. So if you're a Mexican that likes spice, you got to bring your own jalapenos to their parties.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You got to bring your own hot salsa.
Wow. Well, this is border town food. So you're going to see it's a little bit of a mix of going over to the other side to Mexico and being able to go to the stands and get your fruit with the lemon and all that. But then you get the Laredo influence and you get that little bit of American in there too. So they'll be eating the Red Hot, the Cheetos, the Squirt, you know, the other side. So this is like, Laredo is like a mix. You feel like you're in Mexico, but you're in the U.S.
I thought about that this morning when I was getting ready, because you had mentioned that we were going to do this. And I thought, Laredo is so nice. It's so exciting. Like when you go, it's almost like you're in Mexico.
Right.
You get such good flavors. But then also sometimes I feel ripped off when I go because it's not Mexico.
Right.
Because then when I go into Monterrey or Saltillo, where our family in Saltillo is originally from, part of our family, of course. We have ancestry there. When you go there, you've got, forget ice cream trucks. I said, she's going to talk about raspa trucks, but forget that. You've got cars or trucks with the man on the back saying, tortillas, tortillas, frijoles, frijoles. And they're selling tamales and all. They're driving through your neighborhood with food that one in every 1,000 houses in our area gets once a year. I mean, things that we like have to travel all the way to Chicago or Detroit to think about wanting to buy. They've got people on the back of their trucks selling it. And they call it a domicilio. That means to your home. And not only that, it's pennies on a dollar. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about stacks of homemade tortillas for just 50 cents, a dollar. And so, I mean, it is like, I love Laredo and I love the culture because that's where we're from. It's awesome and amazing. But once you then go over the border and go into the towns and into the cities, you're like, I was just getting teased all this time. This was just a little teaser.
Yeah. Laredo is unique in itself. It's just so bilingual, just so Spanglish even. Laredo,
you don't have to know English to get a job.
No, Laredo is its own little culture, you know. People talk about, especially here in Northwest Ohio, a lot of people are from the Valley, you know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people be like, you from the Valley? No, we're from Laredo. Don't confuse Laredo with the Valley. Don't
ever, even though don't it has the same area code, yeah. They're both 956.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Yeah, my dad was from Edcouch, the Valley.
Yeah, they're still 956, but it's a totally different place.
Yeah, it's totally different.
But I think what you guys are talking about, too, is our memory, our life, mm-hmm. is a string of memories put together. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't know what we were doing on 9/10, but all of us knew what we were doing on 9/11. Mm-hmm. So when you go back to the flavors of where you grew up, you go back to what you guys are talking, you're smiling every time. I'm watching both of you guys smile as you're talking.
Because it's because my mom is so beautiful.
Right. It's the taste. It's the smells. It's the it's all those memories that you put together. And as you're saying this, I'm thinking Bronzeville. My mom's mom made homemade corn tortillas by hand, mm-hmm. where she would tap them like
Qué
this.
Ricura.
She would just do it like this. And they sold those out of their house, like mm-hmm. you said. And mom would be a five-year-old on the front end of the what I was told, of the bike, and her sister was riding the bike, and mm-hmm. every morning after the tortillas were made, first thing in the morning, 4 or 5 in the morning, 6, 7, she's on the bike delivering them.
Yep.
So those memories, those flavors, those smells bring back a memory.
Yep.
And sometimes it makes me wonder, how poor did we really grow up? Well, not me, but people who I hear talk about that. How poor how poor did they really grow up that you had these homemade things? You had family. You had a mom that was dedicated to being at home.
Yep.
You know, I do a lot of funerals and quinceañeras for Mexican-American people, descendants of people who migrated here from farm work. And I have to often remind them, you come from rich stock. Your family made major sacrifices to come up here. Mm-hmm. Your abuela was not a dropout. Your grandfather made sacrifices. They made sacrifices together so that abuela could be a stay-at-home mom, mm-hmm. and then at times raise a grandkid, a bonus kid. Mm-hmm. And they never looked down on their children for that. Mm-hmm. They enjoyed that. That was an honor to them.
Yep.
And so when I hear people talk about being raised in poverty, and I'm thinking, but how poor really was it that we had the great traditions, the great family unit, mm-hmm. the great food, the great culture, the great vacations. Yep. I mean, you're talking about raspa trucks that are selling these things for 50 cents.
Yep.
But when you went as a kid, you thought you were rich.
Yep.
You were at that truck and walking out of your grandma's house that was cockroach infested.
Hey, and my grandmother's house alone. It was a shack, but it was nice.
And I made friends with the neighbor across the street who had a nicer house, and I stayed over there because I wasn't staying at their house.
God, but I remember walking across the street there when it was all sand and there wasn't any street.
See?
You know? Right. And I remember, ow, because in Laredo, you're over 100 degrees in the summer. Right. You know? It's hot. And little houses throughout the neighborhood you could walk in and they were selling candy and squirt and your Cheetos.
But it reminds me of the phrase, they were so poor, all they had was their money.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've had friends that couldn't sit in the same room with their brothers. And yet my five brothers and my sisters, we could be at the same nightclub as we grew up all together,
mm-hmm.
because of those fields that we grew up in. We laughed, yeah. we cried, we struggled together, but mm-hmm. the family was like this, and yeah. still to this day.
Yeah.
So it's like they're so poor, all they had was their money.
I heard someone say recently, they said, if you walk into a house because you're invited for dinner and the only thing or the first thing you notice is how dirty their lamps are, don't ever go back. I thought, oh, why? He said, don't ever go back because the first thing you noticed was how dirty their lamps were and not the fact that they invited you into their home, that they're sharing memories and meals with you, that they're sharing the mm-hmm. culture, the history of their family with you at the table. Mm-hmm. So don't go back because what's really dirty is your heart, not their lamps.
Yeah.
What's really corrupt is your thinking, not anything that they did, because they're opening the door for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so how poor were we really? How poor was
rich.
That really?
Yes,
I mean,
you did.
To me,
yep.
Not only is it rich, the memories are so rich to be able to share these stories.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the memories of what your parents went through are good enough mm-hmm. to be in a book and have created a website around
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
Yes, we were 14 kids in the house.
What?
9 brothers and 5 sisters. And my mom, poor mom.
I thought his family was big.
You vetted this lady. Everything she has said has been a surprise to you.
I know. I've known her for years.
I know, but yes, we were 14. We should be 17, but my mom lost 3. She had 3 miscarriages. Wow. And I just remember mom in the kitchen all the time, just cooking. And we were, as a teen, what our parents showed us when we were growing is you need to help your brother and your sister. Because so the elders will help mom in the house for the cleaning, you know. Even and then when I remember that I started helping mom in the kitchen when I was 10 years old. And then she helped me to how to make the arepas. She made 2 packages of arepas.
You've taught me how to make them.
She's taught me.
Oh, yes. You guys have all taught each other, but I haven't seen any in my house.
Yeah.
I've never tasted them. Oh, yeah.
Didn't get the memo.
You didn't teach her that good.
So we help mom cooking. The girls help mom cooking, and the brothers will help mom giving the milk to the babies. You know, the brothers. So it was a teamwork. Everybody had to help mom because we are so many. And I remember when we were little, the girls, our brother, oldest brother, would come and knock our room door. You need to get up. It was like when you're a child, it's 9 o'clock in the morning and you're still in bed, you know. And get up. You need to get up and help mom to clean the house. Come on, get her in. Let's get up. And then we get up.
Oh, she had a whole team.
Let's go and clean the house. Yep. So it was beautiful. We were rich on sharing and being together as a family. We don't have, my dad has to work hard. And when my 2 oldest brothers were probably 14, 15, they started working to help my dad to support the family. So it was a teamwork when we grew up. And then everybody was helping each other. I mean, you need to help your brother to put his shoes. You need, I mean, that was that teaching in the house. Share, you know, and help.
I don't mean to one-up you, but my mom's mom is a child of 25.
Oh,
three, my. 3 sets of twins.
Your mom's mom was having 25 kids before my cable mom, or 25. Public radio.
That's what we were saying, like, get a TV. It's like 3 sets of twins.
That's what
we're saying. Wow.
But they, that's what she's telling you. It's almost like the older ones are raising the next ones.
How to shut that factory down.
It's like literally the older ones are raising the next ones. It's like But back then you needed the farmhands. You know, in the early 1900s, you needed the farmhands.
Yeah.
To keep the family going.
America, you're welcome.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
That is
beautiful. We were poor material. We don't have so many clothes, so many shoes. You know. Yep. But we are so rich, and we ourselves, and with that beautiful teamwork and that compassion. Mm-hmm. We are so rich and compassionate in helping others, helping each other.
And Linda, how many shoes and clothes do you need? How many outfits do you need? How many material things that do you need? You can only drive one car at a time. But a beautiful mother that loves you and cooks and sacrifices and gives birth and teaches you how to be a team, that you can't buy with money.
That was her
job. Eso no se compra.
No.
Right. These are some beautiful stories, beautiful, beautiful stories. I'm so glad we were able to share them because this is the purpose of having La Prensa Habla. And even La Prensa is to, you know, get our stories out there and kind of debunk some of the negative stereotypes and the things that we're hearing out there about immigrants or immigrants that are living here now in Northwest Ohio. So I am so glad that you both have been able to make it and, you know, share that and be open about your life because, you know, that's very personal. So I really thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you for sharing with listeners as well. And I look forward to next week's show and continuing having La Prensa Habla. Yeah.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.
The views and opinions expressed in The Local Thread are those of the hosts of the program and its guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WGTE Public Media.